On America Can We Talk, I talk about election integrity, border security, healthcare freedom, race relations, energy and tax policy, education policy, free speech and assembly, freedom of religion, and all other issues that touch on the God-given right of every American to life, liberty, and the pursuit of their version of happiness. Stay tuned. You preach your tolerance, but lecture me. Is there no end to your own hypocrisy? Your God is power, you have no shame. Your only interest is political gain. You hide your eyes and refuse to listen. You play your game.
Coming up next, America Can We Talk with your host, Debbie Georgiatos.
And hello and welcome to America Can We Talk. I'm Debbie Georgiatos. Today on our show, we're going to talk about ending the trans bathroom rules, at least in Texas. Cheryl Bean, a candidate for Texas State House and House District 97, joins me in studio. Tulsi Gabbard has Lesson for America, a quick video you're going to enjoy. Trump trials update, SCOTUS and the smear job. Does ignoring an enemy invasion equal aid and comfort? Just asking. And finally, if we get to it, a climate emergency coming your way. And of course, I'll tell you why these stories matter to you. But to start the show today, I want to just touch briefly on this amazing thing. You're seeing the power of Texas and the agenda of the left in a quick story. So you likely heard that Title IX, the federal law that used to be kind of a good idea, this notion that you're not going to have discrimination based on sex and other characteristics in the public education system. So Title IX was recently amended at the behest of the Biden administration by the Department of Education and expanded the term discrimination based on sex to include, you know, choosing your own gender, gender ideology. And so with just a stroke of a pen, or really just the advocacy of a federal administration and federal agency, they're basically trying to push the idea that you, a public school, can be liable under Title IX and actually just legally prohibited from discriminating, or their word, discriminating, from requiring anatomical boys to use the men's room, anatomical girls to use the ladies' room. This law, which is set to take place and be in effect as of August 1st, so prior to the next start of this next school year, would essentially take away the school's right, which has been since time began, to basically require boys and girls to have different locker rooms, different changing rooms, different restrooms. So Title IX, this is a change that Biden administration had just decided that we're just going to do it. So two things came out of the gray state of Texas that I want a quick comment on. Neither is a resolution, but at least they're trying. So one is a very wonderful Texas state rep named Brian Harrison, among the more conservative leaders in the Texas House, has at least written a letter to current Speaker of the House, Dade Phelan. He may soon be former Speaker, but in any case, he's in a runoff, but wrote a letter to him basically saying the state of Texas has to begin planning for the idea of no longer requiring federal tax dollars to run the Texas education system. You obviously can't cut ties to federal funds, the public schools in Texas overnight. You have to plan, you know, what money are we getting and how is it used and how, what if we didn't have that program? How can we fund it ourselves? He's basically saying, you know, get a plan for the long term. Brian Harrison saying, though, so Texas doesn't need federal dollars because, as I've mentioned many, many times on this show, there is no constitutional provision even giving authority to the federal government to regulate education. The way they end up controlling the states is because states rely on federal money. And so they're just strings attached to the money. You want the money, then you need to do this and not do that. So Brian Harrison taking one step, gotta love that. He's a great Texas state rep. Other Republican states are beginning to speak up and just say, wait a minute, we're not sure we're gonna go along with this. We also have in the gray state of Texas, our Attorney General Ken Paxton. And he has sued the Biden administration over this rule. The Title IX rule, basically, the summary of it again, it changes or expands the definition of discrimination based on sex to include discrimination based on transgender status. Or what that means in plain English is anyone can pretend, regardless of their God-given biology, they can pretend they're the other gender and they can expect the schools to treat them in that way. And it's not just, I mean, it's bad enough for you know, the access to restrooms, showers, and all of that. It also has to do with access to sporting teams, whether or not boys are obviously, anatomically, since time began, stronger and larger and faster than women. It's okay, there are differences, but the fact is, when you let a male compete in female sports, you just ruin female sports. And this is part of what the complaint has been about this transgender ideology overtaking America. So, Texas Attorney General, in fact, I want to read a couple of his quotes because they were really, really good. Attorney General Ken Paxton, basically because the Department of Education finalized these new rules that actually have been being discussed for months, but there are changes to Title IX, and they take, as I said, take effect August 1st. So one quote by Attorney General Paxton: Texas will not allow Joe Biden to rewrite Title IX at whim, destroying legal protections for women in furtherance of his radical obsession with gender ideology. And so he, Ken Paxton, had the lawsuit filed in the Amarillo Division, in federal court, in the Amarillo Division of the Northern District of Texas, which has a friendly judge who actually also is not lured in by transgender lunacy and has in the past shown he understands there are really just two genders and will not advocate for allowing transgender people who believe they are transgendered to access sporting teams, facilities, et cetera. So he, this judge, his name is Kazmark. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, but Judge Matthew Kazmark, who is a U.S. District Judge in the Northern District of Texas, you know, has, before he became a judge, wrote opinions and actually represented the state of, I think it was West Virginia, Virginia, defending them when they had a 16-year-old, I think it was a girl pretending to be a boy, saying that she wanted to use the boys' locker room and the school was discriminating against her because he wouldn't let her do it. He took that case on, so he's shown the past his understanding of biology and life, that there actually are two genders, and that law cannot circumvent that by just making up new statuses. The bottom line in my first five today is this. We in America have watched the gender ideology explosion in this country, and we've had, if you haven't on my show, gone back and listened to an interview I did several months ago now, with a woman who wrote a book. She's a psychiatrist out of New York. She just blew the lid off, or she just exposed the lunacy of the transgender ideology, basically making the point that there is nothing real about gender ideology as a science, as even a psychiatric term. She's a psychiatrist in New York and tried to expose that. We've been trying to expose it too, because what happens if you don't push now, if you don't say no to this, it will just continue to ruin girls' sports and actually interfere with their ability for public schools to conduct their business in the way public schools need to do. So the woman's name is Dr. Miriam Grossman. If you have not read her book, it's called Trans Nation. I've forgotten the subtitle. Great book, where she eviscerates the idea that there's anything scientific, psychological, or real to the gender ideology movement. So it takes things like in Texas, Brian Harrison, the legislature, and Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton just is saying, we're not going to play along with this anymore. And that, my very fine friends, is today's First Five. So joining us in the studio today, we have Cheryl Bean. She is running for Texas State House. And yes, our primary already happened in March. But here in Texas, we have a number of significant runoffs happening. She's in one of them. This is for House District 97, so it's to serve in the Texas State Legislature. And we have runoffs that are going to, the vote actually occurs on May 28th, and early voting starts May 20th. So people who campaigned in a primary since I don't know how long ago are still campaigning, getting us up to that May 28th deadline when the runoff vote will happen. But she's got an amazing story about how she got involved in politics. She is a very popular candidate with a lot of the conservative base. So welcome to the show, Cheryl Bean.
Hi. Glad to be here.
Cheryl, thank you for coming in. I know you have a busy campaign schedule. You have a debate later, I guess, or a forum or something, right?
I have a debate tonight, yes, with my opponent. So, yes, I do.
You do. Okay, well, I met you actually months ago through some mutual friends who were telling us, and I really didn't know the story, but you were telling about how you, I mean, you weren't really involved in politics until an event occurred at the school you're working at. And I think it was a lot of this was a springboard for why you're running. Is that right?
It's part of it, and it relates back to what you were actually just talking about. I'm a school board member of a public charter school, and it happens to be the home of the Texas Boys Choir, which has a worldwide recognition of being in business. I guess they've been together for 80 years. They're Grammy Award winners. very popular, particularly in the Fort Worth area, but really around the world, and have performed all over. But when I got on that school board within the last couple of years, one of the very first issues that came up was that a young girl had auditioned to be in the boys' choir. And they had kind of basically accepted her. And yet the boys' choir was clearly defined as a group of boys, ages, I think, something like 8 or 9, all the way up through 17. And, you know, a 13-year-old girl doesn't sound a thing like a 8-year-old, 9-year-old soprano. Let's just be honest about it. Not to mention all of the various issues that come along with traveling and all of a sudden introducing a child of the opposite gender coming along. And the issue came up as a result of this, that's very much right there with that Title IX issue of you cannot discriminate based on your sex or your race or religion or whatever. Anyway, we held strong. The board voted to keep the boys' choir, boys' choir. And oh, by the way, we have a girls' choir, girls' choir, girls' choir. And every child in that school can be in either the combo choir or one of the others. But this, you know, after working our way through this and trying to maintain those traditions, and oh, by the way, girls ought to be able to hang with girls if they want to and know they genuinely are, and vice versa. You know, here, I guess the Biden administration has kind of struck that all down. So we're going to be pushed right back to ground zero again going off. And I'm so grateful to both Brian Harrison and Ken Paxton for taking the stand on this.
Oh, me too. So at your school, to the story, the young girl wanted to be in the boys' choir. You all said no. And eventually, I mean, this is the kind of thing where I tell you, if we could go mentally transport ourselves to how we thought 30 years ago, and someone told you these things would be happening, you'd say, well, that's crazy. They're not going to be. But everything happening is so disconnected from reality. It's truly amazing. So at this, your school, so the girl had to join either the girls' choir or the co-ed choir. She just couldn't join the boys. And then is there litigation ongoing from that?
There's an investigation ongoing, let's put it that way. The ACLU, of course, they wanted to move towards your sex defined as your gender identity as opposed to the biological sex. As of right now, our rules say it's according to your biological sex. So the question's going to be, can we hold that with Biden's new rule on Title IX?
It will be exactly that. So actually, it is amazing. I came across a story last night, you know, to run the, and I was thinking, actually driving, and wow, I bet Cheryl Bean will like this story. She'll think it's interesting. So so in this, if you do prevail, which I hope you do in this primary, in this runoff, is that the kind of issue, do you think it's realistic for what Representative Harrison is saying, that maybe we can actually wean Texas off of federal tax dollars to fund our schools? Is that, you have any idea if that's even reasonable? Or
I think it's reasonable, and honestly, that's the hammer or leverage that they have over us, because the reality of it is right now public schools are depending on both state as well as federal funding. Charter schools do not get as much as other kinds of public schools, your standard schools. So losing that federal money right now would be a major issue. So you know, you really don't want to be in a position where you can have somebody not live anywhere in your community or even in your state saying that we're going to go with this social value. And that's really what we're down to. It's a social belief here as to what, you know, genders can be and what the definition of sex really is.
Yeah, it sure is. So that'll be one issue that will probably get your attention. And actually, I don't know if that drove you by itself. I think you said that was part of it. So what else drove you to run for Texas State Rep?
Well, there's several things, actually. I have a background in defense. Spent the bulk of my life up in you know, the last 15 years, even then, in some form or fashion. But I start doing threat assessments and working for one of the very large Fortune 100 companies here in the Metroplex, and applying advanced technologies to deal with those, you know, aspects of defense. So when I look at the border, not only do I see people invading us as they come across and taking on facilities and benefits that American citizens uniquely have and abusing that privilege, but I also see terrorists come across. And make no mistake, the cartel is the largest terrorist group in the entire world, much bigger than ISIS, much bigger than Taliban, fiercer and broader spread, and they are out of control. And the fact that they are coming over, as well as all of the foreign nationals that are not here to be friendly, let's just be honest about it, that is very concerning to me. And I think that I bring a unique kind of experience to that, and I think we need to shut it down before we are actually overrun. The other piece of it is I'm a builder now. Don't ask me how, but I went from defense to building homes and stuff. So who knows better than how to build a wall than a builder who does that for a living. So that issue is very dear and near to my heart. Another issue that really bothers me is, I don't know what it's called, but it's kind of the lawfare that we're playing. We're seeing it against, you know, President Trump now. But prior to that, like just this past year, we saw it against our attorney general. And I have a great deal of respect for the things he does, like right now, standing up to this stroke of a pen, let's change Title IX. And yet, so he was a big target, and they're using that to come after him. That's striking Americans at their basic freedoms. And I am very opposed to that. If everybody deserves due process, no matter what decisions they've made in their lives or what choices they've made, everyone deserves due process. So that's kind of another big venture out there.
It is a big issue, and you might imagine we've covered that in the show over and over, the impeachment of our attorney general and the Texas House. Just, I mean, many, many aspects I shouldn't go over and over again, but kind of it was under wraps for the term. People didn't know what was going to happen. I think it was Memorial Day weekend, so we're coming up, you know, in about a month and about a year from now, a year ago, where it was just out of the blue and in clear violation of state law, which said you cannot impeach someone for conduct that occurred prior to this most recent election. That's the law. And they just decided, well, we just don't like this guy. I don't think it had one thing to do with what the allegations of the impeachment were. I think it was a lot of the things that he brought to the table as attorney general that caused people to turn on him. And it stirred a lot of Texans up. A lot of people up. You know, I actually did not do a due process. No, I didn't do fairly with you on introducing you because your background's kind of amazing. And I want to quickly do that. So you're the daughter of a U.S. Air Force fighter pilot, which is wonderful, but also you're an engineer with a master's degree in aerospace industry. So that's quite amazing. You're an engineer, spent 20 years, you mentioned a moment ago, working for defense companies, leading teams to develop high-tech systems and war gaming strategies. These are, these are quite amazingly, I don't know what the right word is, but they are obviously, education mattered hugely, and bringing to bear your skills and knowledge and a really important thing in the defense industry. And I should have stressed that or said that when I introduced you. So, I mean, you're bringing quite a background to this, to the legislature.
Well, thank you. And I believe that. In fact, one of the reasons I'm running, my husband and I, the more we've watched this country kind of lose its moral compass and kind of start making some major turns in how we behave, the more involved we've become. And the more involved we became, whether it was being involved in more organizations, supporting more other politicians that we align with, I just kept hearing this, knocking almost in my brain of you're not doing enough. And finally, when the incumbent in the seat that I'm running for decided to step down, it was very loud. And it was saying, you have been prepared for a time like this. And if you look at all the major issues we are facing in Texas today, over my lifetime, I've gotten been blessed to get extreme education and awareness of them, whether that be the defense world going towards the border, or that be the education and school choice and the gender issues that we're facing because I'm on the school boards, or just business and prosperity and stuff. You know, I'm a kind of an unusual candidate because not only do I have the entrepreneurial and small business experience, I have international experience in a Fortune 100 company with both manufacturing and engineering. So I kind of know what goes into all of those pieces of it.
Yeah, your resume is totally impressive. And I want to add one more thing about your resume before I turn back to issues in Texas, which is you also spent time in Israel as a manager for an Israeli-owned company and worked closely with members of their special forces. I think the night we met you, I was telling you, so my husband's business partner is an Israeli citizen and lives basically outside of Tel Aviv. And he's got three grown kids who are, I mean, the youngest was in whatever their equivalent is of Navy SEALs. I mean, the highest level of scary people. He's in that level, and they're dear friends of ours. So my husband's been to Israel. I mean, I don't even know how many times, many, many dozens of times. I've been there a couple times, but they're just an extraordinary ally to America. And so, even though it's not probably a Texas legislature issue, the awareness of our alliance with Israel and what they represent to America and why it's important to be connected to them. This is a gift to the Texas legislature to have you there and know about Israel.
Well, thank you. You know, people don't realize that. I mean, biblically, we are supposed to be and take care of and honor and take care of God's people, the Jewish people. But even if you took that totally out of the equation, the Middle East is a hotbed, and it always has been, it always will be. And they are our biggest ally over there that gives us visibility into that whole region. And, you know, and if you look at it, when we left Afghanistan, one of the companies that my husband and I run, we actually move servicemen around countries like that and vacate them and help them when they're injured. But we do that kind of work. We lost our eyes to that part of the world.
Yes.
And now we're in North Africa, and guess what? We just surrendered North Africa. Not very many people realize that. But in fact, we still have people and equipment over there, and we're coming home. And, you know, it's nice knowing that they're going to stay and do the things they do in their country. But when we leave, guess where they're coming? They're coming across our border now. That's exactly where they're coming.
Oh, absolutely. Great segue back to another issue that is in bigger than Texas legislature, of course, is the ongoing treatment and see what with Ken Paxton, because there are people with Attorney General Paxton, people already talking about, well, there's probably something more. They're after him. They were not going to let that go. And to have the lawlessness that prevailed in the House be really the primaries that happened in many seats in the Texas House, it was a rebuke of the lawlessness of the impeachment. Mm-hmm. People coming after those who supported the impeachment and kind of secreted it through and trying to announce it as a fait accompli to the Texas people. We already did it. Sorry, he's out. Goodbye. And then, of course, we had the Senate be willing to look at the actual facts. So anyway, but then the border is a big issue in Texas and everywhere across America, but certainly the states contiguous to the Mexican border. So what more can legislature do? What should they be doing? And should Governor Abbott be doing? Excuse me.
The first thing we need to do, I just got back from the border a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Went down and got to see what's really going on. I got to talk to a lot of the people who are there on the border serving. And the first thing we need to do is we need to pass the law that did not get passed this last session that says no illegals will be voting in Texas. And I'm going to tell you why. There is kind of an obscure law that relates to paroling of people from countries that are in distress, where you can bring in on an individual basis individuals who you have a hard time getting in as quickly as you need to get them out and in on a sanctuary basis. Unfortunately, unbeknownst to me, but has been going on now for a couple of years, starting in 22, we are actually bringing in 30,000 people a month from the combination of Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela, and Haiti. These people are being flown directly into our country, wherever city at the government's choice, okay, and they're giving 2-year work visas and a Social Security number. With that Social Security number, they are going to be eligible to apply to vote in 2024.
I want to jump in. To be really clear, the 30,000 being brought in parolees, this is not by the state of Texas, by Governor Abbott. This is the federal government. This is the Biden team.
The federal government, right.
Yeah.
But it's also now occurring at our border. And the problem is, if you think about that, these people that we all say, okay, whether they're coming across the border or they're coming in from this other way, ultimately they're going to be voters.
It's outrageous. It's outrageous. Yeah. And every effort toward any sort of election integrity, any effort toward pushing for voter ID or clarifying voter ID, I mean, the left just screams and yells and stomps. I feel like a 5-year-old at the candy counter just saying you can't do that and trying to make some point about this is discriminatory. They make the most preposterous arguments to fight against voter integrity, to fight against voter ID. And our side we try to push it in some states, and we have at least voter ID in Texas, but we have places where they just have been bullied. The conservatives who want to have voter integrity with a good voter ID have been just bullied into silence.
Well, and this is even worse. It's not a question of integrity at the voting booths now. It's a question of going around our entire immigration policy and around our entire voter registration policy, such that here in 2024, we can have a lot of these people legally voting. And in fact, the Attorney General and I had a discussion about it just last week or so, and he brought it up at a meeting we were at, that, you know, how do we stop this? There are 47 states, including Texas, that do not have a law that says if you're illegal, you cannot vote. With that Social Security number, you can register to vote.
Okay,
so this is
a huge issue. It is huge, and now you're alarming me even more than I already was. So you're saying only three states have a law that says you have to prove citizenship? Is that what the law says?
So I don't know about you. I thought if you had to have a driver's license to vote in Texas, and I asked this point blank. Well, if you have to get a driver's license, you have to have a birth certificate or some other form of proof of citizenship. But you don't. You can, in fact, get to a voter registration without a driver's license in Texas, and we did not pass in this last legislature of 2023 that you cannot have illegals voting.
Okay, so there was a bill specifically on that point that illegal, without, if you're in illegal status, you can't vote, and we didn't pass that. Do you happen to know the history? The Senate passed it?
I don't know if it made it to the Senate. It did not pass the House.
Well, the House, I figure, would be the problem.
But that was that problem, yes. Yeah. And I don't know if it came up in the Senate, but I know because I'm focused on the House right now, it did not make it past the House.
That alone is worth a special session.
Absolutely.
Just to say, special session. We have a law in Texas. If you're an illegal alien, if you don't have legal status here, you can't vote. And even, you know, the notion of citizenship just being a core idea. Every state should say you have to be a citizen to vote. That's our criteria. The idea we have to argue about that is truly amazing. So, mm-hmm. Well, now you've alerted me to that, and I'm going to get all over that point. Okay.
It's called paroling.
Paroling, okay.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Okay, glad to know that. So if you can put her chyron up again here, Mr. Emilio, I want to encourage our, here we go. Okay, so we are speaking, actually, you know what, I didn't have the thing I wanted to have. I do have it right here, though. I want to tell our listeners, so we're talking to Cheryl Bean. She's a candidate for Texas House District 97. The website is texas97th.com, mm-hmm. texas97th.com. Okay, well, one more time. The word texas97th.com, because that's where you can go to learn more about you.
Right.
Volunteer for your campaign. I'm sure you still love volunteers, correct?
I'll take donations, too.
I was going to get there next. Okay
good.
And donations. I always make the point. Everyone wishes, or they sometimes even think, these campaigns, they can't cost that much money. You know, and I know from my campaign, for RNC committee woman, yeah, they cost money, and they just do. So, and donations still welcomed. And honestly, the shape of the Texas legislature will be different after this cycle is over, because as I mentioned earlier, several people, there were numerous races, I think 9, where an incumbent lost out in a primary because someone challenged him, mainly over the vote to impeach Ken Paxton, although it was a package of things that were part of that.
A lot of things like that, yes. And just the way that the House is being run. And if you look at it, are you familiar with the contract with Texas?
Yeah, yes. I've been all over it, but go ahead.
Yes, so I have signed that already. But that is a thing where we can actually, you know, we're going to stand up. Those of us who are going in that direction are going to say no more Democratic chairs. There are going to be term limits on the House Speaker, such that his control. We're not going to allow for the parliamentarian to be able to abuse that power and avoid, you know, things getting to the floor. And in fact, in this last session, it's very discouraging. Being a part of precinct chair prior to this and a part of the whole Republican planks that came up, all 8 of the, you know, the top priorities were not really addressed. They were not, most of them never made it to the floor because they were sidetracked either by the parliamentarian or rules committee or calendar or something. So this contract for Texas is a really big deal.
It is. And, you know, we had Andy Hopper on a mm-hmm. week ago, or I think a week ago. In any case, we went through the contract, and I will tell you, I said our listeners, I'll say it again, kind of like when people kept thinking, when do the Republican elected officials ever listen to the people? And Newt Gingrich came along, said contract with America, and that spelled out, and he basically hit all the points that Republican voters wanted. And even the House didn't, or the legislature in Washington didn't get every single thing passed, but at least they all got raised, and most of them got through. That just kind of so it's kind of saying, rather than having just a bunch of Republicans get elected, those who signed on are saying, we understand these are the target pieces, mm-hmm. and we're going after them, which was fabulous. And so you signed on to that. I love that.
Right.
And it actually holds, you know, for the people who say, well, I'm not sure what the people think. You know, when you've got this out there, are you signing on or not? Are you with us or not? Mm-hmm. It's a really, really great thing.
Right.
So you signed on for that.
In fact, one of the best things about it, it says that before we allow to go off and do a bunch of Democratic, you know, legislature, we're going to address the top planks or the top priorities of the Republican Party. That's part of it. So,
yes,
that's a big stand.
Oh, it's a fabulous stand. Fabulous, and not having a Democrat chairs or House committees. And also, you mentioned something. I don't know if they have this. This is a national show, so other states don't have this yet. Mm-hmm. But we have in Texas. We had the SREC, the State Republican Executive Committee, came up with a list of legislative priorities. Was there 8, I think? Or
there were 8. I have 8. Them in front of me.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway,
there were 8.
We'll get to them in a second. But just to say, you know, this is kind of a body that represents the voting base of Texas. So it is two, a man and a woman from every Senate district. And they actually worked really hard to come up with precisely what they wanted our priorities to be. It's a way to communicate from the voters to the legislature, here's what we care about. And so it was just, it was really quite impressive that that they actually organized that, did it, and made the presentation. And so it does, it made it harder for Republicans in office to say, well, I'm not really sure where the party stands. I don't, you know, just couldn't do it. So in the Texas legislature, in this most recent session, we had 8 of these. And you want to quick say what they are? We're good. You can quick say it.
Yeah, secure the border and protect our citizens. We all know that's a big one. Protect our elections, you know, the parental rights and education, and that's, you know, the parents get control over that without strings. Stop sexualizing our kids. That's with a lot of the gender issues. Ban gender modification. Abolish abortion in Texas, which we've made huge strides on. Defend our gun rights and eliminate property tax with a 8 this past session. And yes, we did pass, you know, a border law and legislation this last time. It was fairly watered down, but we did make some effort. But the Senate passed all of these. The House did not. So that's part of what this is about. This House should serve the people, and that's what we're trying to get back to.
It's like representational government, kind of.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, one would think. Okay, yeah. So one more time for our listeners. Oh, thank you very, very much, Ms. Jamilia. You've added to the Chiron, the website. People listening, this is a great, great candidate for Texas State House. It is Texas97.com, and that means it stands for the House District 97. Cheryl Bean, she's a very, very well-liked, popular candidate, and I believe this runoff will be a happy result. But do, if you're in Texas, if you're going to go in Memorial Day weekend and vote ahead of time, be sure you vote, or else get back by Tuesday after Memorial Day to have your vote heard, your voice heard, your vote cast. And so, Cheryl Bean, I know you are busy. Thank you for coming in and talking to
Thank
me.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun.
Great to have you.
Okay.
Okay, friends, I want to share something with you. So, you know, we have fall elections coming up, and there's a video that was put out by Tulsi Gabbard. By the way, I met her at some function. She's the nicest person. We talked for a long time. Anyway, quick video explaining why she's leaving the Democrat Party. I asked Mr. Mueller, do you have that ready, sir? Yes, we do. Let's hear what Tulsi Gabbard has to say.
Today, I want to share something with you that has been on my mind and has been troubling me for quite some time, and has now compelled me to take action. I love our country, our God-given rights of freedom, life, and liberty that are enshrined in our Constitution and Bill of Rights are what inspires me. I took an oath dedicating my life to supporting and defending those freedoms, both in uniform and in public office.
Please welcome Tulsi Gabbard.
I was drawn to the ideals of a big tent, inclusive, democratic party that stood up for working men and women, that stood up for the little guy.
My fellow Democrats.
I can no longer remain in today's Democratic Party. It's now under the complete control of an elitist cabal of warmongers driven by cowardly wokeness, who divide us by racializing every issue and stoking anti-white racism.
The problem with white people.
Who actively work to undermine our God-given freedoms enshrined in our Constitution, who demonize the police, who protect criminals at the expense of law-abiding Americans, who believe in open borders, who weaponize the national security state to go after their political opponents, and who are hostile to people of faith.
There's a lot more. She said I had to cut it off. But honestly, Tulsi Gabbard, I love that video. I believe we placed a link, or no, we will put a link up at our website for that. Because I think people need to really, she does a good job of capturing all the crazy of today's American left. And, you know, she started out being a Democrat because she was lured in by the thought, the false impression many people have believed about the Democrat Party, that somehow they're the ones inclusive and everyone has a place at the table. All the blah, blah, blah they say, which has nothing to do with what they do, no relation at all to how they act, what they do, the bills they pass. So it was a really great video. Grateful Tulsi Gabbard spoke up and said that. So I think she's going to have a future somehow in our politics. I don't know how, but I'm grateful for her voice. Okay, I want to hit this. You know, Trump trials are ongoing, and I want to just hit. I've talked about them quite a bit in the show, but I want to hit the idea that, you know, the pulling together of all of the trials that President Trump is undergoing. I think I called it Trump Trials Update: SCOTUS and the Smear Job. There's a really good piece that was out by one of the best writers in America, Victor Davis Hanson. He's just an amazingly thoughtful writer. We put a link up at our website. And by the way, anyone listening, wherever you are, our website is AmericaCanWeTalk.org, AmericaCanWeTalk.org. And while you have that chyron up, leave it up. My campaign for RNC committee woman is also, it's a different website. It's Debbie, D-E-B-B-I-E, G, for, the digit for, RNC.com, Debbie G for RNC.com. Love to have you check out that website. You'll see this campaign I'm in. The election is actually on Saturday, May 25th at the Texas State Convention. But check out our website. You're welcome to endorse wherever you are, and certainly welcome to donate if you'd like to. But the show is AmericaCanWeTalk.org. Every show I've ever done, past interviews, you can find it all there. Okay, turning back to Donald Trump. We've been talking about Donald Trump's the lawfare term, which you heard our guest a moment ago make a comment about. The lawfare is just the abuse of the legal system, civil and criminal, designed by anti-American people who cannot get the country to vote for the policies they want, can't get the country to vote for the people they want. So they abuse the legal system by bringing weak, deceptive, dishonest, nefarious cases before the courts. And there is great collusion in the among the people who are bringing these kind of charges, especially President Trump. There is, in case you haven't noticed, a full-on effort, an army, a tsunami of cases against President Trump, all designed to make him either, you know, a criminal, have him, you know, somehow convicted of something, or just make him unpalatable in the minds of voters to harm his chances. And I will tell you that all they've done so far is convince more and more Americans that Donald Trump, he must be doing great things, because otherwise the left wouldn't be so hysterical about him. But there's a great summary that was written. I want to just mention a couple of brief points about it from Victor Davis Hanson. So the cases are the criminal cases now pending, unprecedented in American history. The criminal cases pending against Donald Trump. You have Alvin Bragg going after President Trump over a payment which had no, I mean, other prosecutors looked at it, it's absurd, laughed it off, but Alvin Bragg is going after this payment during the Trump campaign to a woman who's a pole dancer or stripper. I don't know what she was, but you know, she wasn't, that she had that kind of choice in lifestyle. And she, this payment thing is supposedly now the basis of 47 charges. That's how many Alvin Bragg bought, 47 charges. That's Alvin Bragg. One is Letitia James, a New York prosecutor, going after essentially the contents of loan documents that had no damage to anyone. The banks who made the loans were actually saying they wish they could have done more business. They're testifying, wish they could have done more business with President Trump. So Letitia James bringing those loan document cases preposterous damages being assessed. And then you have, as she wants to be called, Fannie, the Georgia prosecutor in the arena of election statements surrounding the election, which again have never been the basis for any kind of criminal prosecution. And then you have Jack Smith bringing a charge against President Trump related to the January 6th protest. So there's a great piece written, and I urge you to read it. I can't read the whole thing on the show, but read this about by Victor Davis Hanson, just talking about, you know, this is collusion between the forces of the left, these seemingly unrelated cases, collusion, the forces of the left going after a former president, not because he's done anything wrong, but because he threatens everything about the left's power in this country, and they know it. And of course, you have the documents case in Mar-a-Lago, another disaster. But in front of the Supreme Court today, why I called this the SCOTUS and referred to the Supreme Court, there's an argument before the Supreme Court, a case before the court, in which the question is essentially, what does presidential immunity mean, and how far does it extend? You could, because it's been understood, you know, since America was America, that the president and elected officials have immunity over actions they take in the course of their serving the country, serving in the capacity for which they were elected. So, you know, President Trump is, you know, the subject of all these cases. And the argument, though, this one relates to the case involving January 6th. And the argument is by Jack Smith, well, you know, that Trump stirred up the people, which he didn't do, that caused an insurrection, which wasn't an insurrection. And you know, anyone paying attention already knows this. But the argument for the Supreme Court is, how far does immunity go? And I'm just going to tell you quickly that The case went before the Supreme Court. It sounded like the arguments, in fact, this was the case, these arguments I'm referring to happened in the Supreme Court last Thursday. And they're before this. So the Supreme Court, you know, is impaneled listening to all this. There was a couple great statements about by Neil Gorsuch. He was the first justice on the Supreme Court that was appointed by President Trump. And the case is about, you know, the case is about whether when Trump makes a speech, he's still president on January 6, 2021, he's still president until January 20th of that year, he makes a speech, can that be the basis for a criminal prosecution, or should presidential immunity apply? And so this statement by Gorsuch said, I'm not concerned about this case, but I am concerned about future uses of the criminal law to target political opponents based on accusations about their motives. And he went on to say, we are writing a rule for the ages. So Gorsuch is trying to say, this is not about, you know, love Trump, hate Trump, support him, don't support him, but you recognize the profound, I mean, for decades and centuries long impact of what the court allows in terms of a criminal prosecution of a presidential speech. That's basically what it was on January 6th, a presidential speech and a protest later that has all sorts of elements of nefarious involvement by the left, by the FBI. But in any case, the Supreme Court is looking at it, and Justice Kavanaugh weighed in also to say, as you've indicated, this case has huge implications for the presidency, for the future of the presidency, for the future of the country. And I want you to tell you that even the left-wing judges, justices on the Supreme Court who, you know, don't support anything about President Trump, they've got to be thinking, we're writing something that could impact whether or not Joe Biden becomes, now he wouldn't because he's senile and you can't, he wouldn't meet the standard of capable of standing trial because he's not mentally competent, yet he runs our country. But still, you would have those justices worried about someone taking the kinds of actions that Joe Biden has done, allowed our southern border to be overrun, allow, as a matter of fact, at the southern border, there's now recent evidence that they're not even using our officials, our officers at the southern border have plenty of space to put people crossing the border into confinement to figure out before we let them loose, do you have any basis to argue for amnesty, any basis to argue for asylum? And we aren't using them. These are facilities sitting nearly empty, and we're just letting people come in. Now, under many, we're going to get to this in a minute about what that should constitute and whether that is a true crime, which of course I think it is. But the point is, the justices on the Supreme Court have to be thinking, wow, I mean, what could they do to Biden or to Kamala Harris, who's complicit in this, or to DHS Secretary Mayorkas? What could this mean if we're going to expand, we're going to, you know, tightly confine immunity? Because the immunity idea is pretty much anything you did as an officer in the country, you're immune from criminal prosecution. This case has enormous implications, not just for the immediate time, but for decades to come, because you could have someone claim, for example, that Biden's withdrawal from Afghanistan, almost intentional abandonment of our troops in Afghanistan, leading to deaths of our soldiers. You know, that's probably, you know, I don't know, is that criminal? And it was clearly done in the scope of his presidency. And, you know, people make arguments about, well, you know, but, you know, what if the president, you know, left the presidency and then robbed a bank 10 years later? Okay, we'll deal with that kind of case when it comes. But the notion here of these Supreme Court justices cannot just stridently insist that immunity is broad and almost absolute. Now, what Lindsey Graham weighed in, I'm sorry to report, but he weighed in talking about, you know, it might be that the court will just list a set of questions and then refer the case back to the lower court. It would be a fabulous outcome if the United States Supreme Court, 9-0, could just basically say, we don't do this in this country. We don't behave like a third world banana republic or like a Stalin-esque communist country where we have a new entity come into power, a new group, a new party, and they just criminalize the conduct of the previous party. Everything happening to Donald Trump falls under this. and everything, even though this case relates particularly to the January 6th case, the immunity should be so broad. And otherwise, honestly, people, the country, you lose the ability to have an effective president. So I'll keep a close eye, of course, on that question. Okay, I don't want to do a quick story about what's happening at the border, and it relates again, it kind of relates to immunity. But we have at the border now the gathering of Chinese nationals. I mean, many, many others, people from all sorts of countries, that many filled with jihadists who clearly mean us harm. But we have many military-aged Chinese men, single men, crossing a southern border. We've heard from experts on the show that many of them are tied directly to the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. And there was a great piece written by my friend Sam Faddis. In fact, Sam Faddis is he's endorsed my campaign as an aside because he knows how serious I am about America. But Sam Faddis writes at AND Magazine, and he has a piece called "Are the Chinese Moving Special Operations Teams Onto Our Soil in Preparation for an Assault?" It's a very fair question. Sam Faddis, former decades-long CIA special super secret operative working around the world, he knows how people do things like this. He knows how the country of China would act if they were beginning to arrange an assault on America. So he's writing about the idea, how could we in this country have all these people coming in, because I'll read you the subtitle of his article in a moment, all these people coming in, Chinese military-aged men, no apparent reason to be here, not detained at the border, released into the heartland of America, building little units all over our country. I don't mean physical building, there's probably that too, but building groups of organized Chinese nationals loyal to the Chinese Communist Party all over America. China has said that they intend to become the world's single superpower. China says it, they say it over and over, we know it's true. So here's what Sam Faddis wrote: "Are the Chinese moving special operations teams onto our soil in preparation for an assault?" Subtitle: "We don't know, and we aren't trying to find out." Most troubling piece of everything he wrote is, why aren't we trying to find out? Why isn't every agency of the federal government, whose job it is to protect America, why aren't they all tracking these people down, finding who the heck they are, why they're here, and sending them home while we're at it? So this, he wrote a very, very chilling piece. A great friend of mine, who's an uber intellect, sent me a text, just said basically, this sounds like maybe even, like a serious violation of law, and maybe even something we ought to consider whether it is treason. So I just want to raise the question. I'm raising the question. The treason clause in the United States Constitution, it reads, Article 3, Section 3, Clause 1. It reads, "Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them." So if you're the president, you levy war against your own people. "Or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort." It goes on, "No person shall be convicted of treason unless in the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or in confession in open court." But the clause we're talking about here is the Biden administration, should we be looking into the question of whether or not they are giving aid and comfort to China, our worst enemy, most dangerous enemy to the United States of America now, is China letting these people in? Is anyone talking about, are we providing aid and comfort to them? We don't detain them. The DHS keeps saying we have detention space vacant. It's not being used. And so I think it's a question that's fair for the American people to ask. It's fair for Congress to ask. It's fair for the RNC to ask. Why isn't someone looking at the question, is this administration giving aid and comfort to our enemies by failing to enforce the border, especially as we all have become aware, more alarmingly aware, of the number of people, young Chinese military age men, not coming with a wife and three kids, coming on their own, groups of men, pouring into the heartland of America. We're in the well over tens of thousands of them now, and we're unaware of any effort to look into them, understand why they're here. I mean, it's a very fair question. There was another piece at Daily Signal kind of talking about, the other reasons Chinese nationals come to America. They're mainly coming through the San Diego border facility, and they're saying basically it's because the infrastructure allows it. The cartels are helping them. There's basically no stopping them at the border. There's not like it's really being enforced against them. They can claim they're coming for a better life, but you know, if you had a better life mentality, you think you'd bring your family, but that's not what's happening. But then the other thing, Chinese influence on America. I mean, just a growing, you know, we talked about many times, the book written in 1998 by those two Chinese military officials called Unrestricted Warfare, where they laid out, here's how we're going to take down America. They're telling us they're trying to take down America, and yet we sit here watching an administration that has been the recipient of magnificent beneficence, generosity from the Chinese government and others. And I think it's fair to ask the question, does ignoring an enemy invasion equal aid and comfort? I think we should be asking. Okay, the final topic I want to hit briefly today is this idea of a climate emergency, a pending climate emergency. I call this climate emergency, is it coming your way? You know, the left uses emergencies to gain power. They use the emergency of COVID when they said, oh my gosh, you know, we have this scary virus. So, you know, we're going to be going after, we're going to restrict you in your home. We're going to tell you can't travel. You have to wear a mask. You have to socially distance. You can't open your business. COVID is a vast overreaction to the COVID virus in America in 2020, 2021, an overreaction the left has used. In fact, even the World Economic Forum head Klaus Schwab essentially wrote a book about using COVID as an excuse, as a springboard to assert more globalist power in the hands of the World Economic Forum. So the left uses crises whenever available to gain power and to take away your freedom. And then when the crisis passes, you know, the freedom doesn't usually come back. And so this concept of recognizing that the leftists who want to control all of America will use an emergency, use something alarming people are scared about to gain power, is as old as time. But there is a climate is another reason, another basis the left uses to try to claim more power in America. And I want to just tell you, there was a talk last week, the White House essentially, they announced, or it was leaked, that they are renewing their internal talks on invoking a climate emergency. And you might think, all right, okay, fine, they're always talking climate, and they are. I mean, the climate change hysteria has been going on now for, I don't even know what it is, 20, 30 years. And despite the fact that prediction after prediction after prediction by the climate alarmists that said, oh my gosh, you know, we're all gonna freeze to death. No, we're gonna boil to death. No, all the polar bears will be gone. No, the ice caps are gonna be gone. None of their predictions come true. I mean, I've done on the show one time, I really got into that issue, like 50 different examples of headlines where the leftists who claim climate is an emergency were making prognostications that were so scary that everyone just froze. Okay, tell us how to prevent this. Tell us what to do. And yet, you know, when those things don't come true, the climate alarmists never say, hey, by the way, I guess we kind of overreacted. Maybe it wasn't so bad. You never hear that. There's never the backing off and acknowledgement, actually, it wasn't as bad as we said, or turned out we were wrong. You never hear that. But climate is something the left uses, like COVID. They use climate to create an atmosphere of fear, to describe a problem the average Joe thinks, well, I'm not a climatologist, I don't know, you know, I guess I could be right. Same with COVID, well, I'm not a expert on viruses or how they spread, or I'm not a doctor, so I don't know, but I listen to the experts. So the idea of using something like a climate emergency is just a tempting beyond, like a chocolate ice cream cone to a five-year-old. I mean, they can't wait to get their hands on, think of something else they can do. So the White House is renewing their internal talks on invoking a climate emergency. And you might think, well, what do you care? It's not going to hurt you, you know, but I want you to think about the things that could flow from that. Because they're trying very hard to eliminate the use of fossil fuels, even though there is no reason to eliminate the use of fossil fuels. If you doubt me, if you think, yes, fossil fuels are very evil and very scary, go to our website, AmericaCanWeTalk.org. Go back to interviews. All our interviews are there. Go back to one with Jason Isaacs. In fact, two interviews with Jason Isaacs, where he breaks down the data. There's no reason to be worried about climate change, no worried, reason to be worried about fossil fuels, no reason to be worried about the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. All those things are false flags, or put another way, they're just lies. Go back to that show, Jason Isaac, another one, an expert, great expert on our show, Mark Morano, M-O-R-A-N-O. He was on the show once or twice talking about the same idea. There's no reason for the panic the left is creating. Not because we have a serious climate problem, but we could kind of cool our jets a bit on the solution. It's because the catastrophe they try to paint, the alleged danger they try to paint, is not real. And this is the kind of thing, I mean, I'll just tell you one little fact. I just was on a conference call yesterday for like an hour talking about, among other things, about climate emergency. And this one fact, just tell your best friends, tell your 25 best friends, what portion of the Earth's atmosphere, of all the gases surrounding the Earth, what portion do you think is CO2? I mean, fill in the blank in your head what do you think it is. Because when they talk about CO2 is rapidly expanding, we're all going to die, the portion of the atmospheric gases that is CO2 is 0.04, not even half of 1%. And the fluctuations that they point to in graphs are because they take a minuscule, strung out to 8 or 9 decimal points increase, but you crunch it into a chart and it looks like a lot. I'm telling you all this to say the climate alarmists use climate change to cause fear. And they do it ultimately. They don't cause fear for no reason. They cause fear in order to gain power, to gain control. So why you should be worried about the White House talking about a climate emergency is because the solutions they will have will impact your freedom. They will take away your freedom. They'll come up with limitations, for example, like how many miles you can drive. They've got vehicle now keeping track of more and more tracking everything you do. So how far you can drive, how much gas you're allowed to purchase in a week or a month, or how whether or not you can travel for frivolous, family vacation reasons versus necessary travel. The potential for the White House to use a climate emergency to shut down your freedom, it is an endless playground. They have no intention of just saying, hey, public service announcements coming, here's what we see as a problem. They're doing this because they see it as a way to take away more of your freedom. And there are people, I'm not there yet, but there are people concerned this climate emergency is going to somehow impact the fall elections, the schedule of the fall elections. I don't think the White House or the left would dare cancel the fall elections. I think there would be an uprising if that were to occur. But if they could get away with it, they would. They're very worried. The left is very worried about the fall elections. They know the people have hated the last 4 years under Biden. They can't wait to have a new government in. They can't wait to have Trump back in office. And they are doing everything they can think of to stop that. So, in fact, back one last thing before I turn to why it matters to you. So, they have Earth Day or something all the time. It seems like they have Earth Day things regularly. But in any case, the Biden administration officially launched something new called the American Climate Crisis Program. I don't know what it's called. The Climate Work Program. The short story is they have somehow can't find money to build the Southern Wall, can't find money to enforce the border, but they have now a new program, this American Climate what the heck it's called? American Climate Work Program. But they're putting in billions of dollars into a new program to create new jobs in the climate arena, to get more people involved in the fight, to save our planet and protect against climate change. Again, they build a mountain of fear, especially among young people who are not onto the game, and they've been, frankly, through public schools that stress climate change as though it's the impending disaster of the century, which it's not. And so you get these people on board, and in creating fear over climate will only result in the United States, the citizens losing freedom and the federal government taking more power. I could do more on this. However, we are, as we often get to it at this point, we are out of time on the show. So I want to tell you, I close the show every day by telling you why the stories we talked about today matter to you. So we started talking about ending the trans bathroom battles in Texas. The Biden cabal radical rewrite of Title IX puts trans versus women front and center. Men and women's bathrooms and men and women's sports now posited as the law of the land. There is zero evidence that Title IX rewrite is desired or supported by the American people. Not desired or supported by a majority, not desired or supported by even a sizable minority. This is pure agenda of take down America, destroy the family, destroy Christianity. This is the agenda. Red states led by Texas AG Paxton are stirring with, legal and other resistance. If red states can establish independence from the need of federal education funding, coercive power of the federal government evaporates or at least reduced. There is nothing inevitable or progressive about leftist gender ideology. It's regressive and destructive to the health of humanity. It's also false. It must be resisted and defeated. On Trump trials updates, SCOTUS and the smear job, transparent injustice of political lawfare versus Trump becoming obvious to all sentient people. SCOTUS arguments on scope of presidential immunity suggest the justices recognize the magnitude of the issue and are not swayed by Trump derangement syndrome. The office of the presidency must not be neutered. No one will benefit from such a result. Criminalizing political opposition from any partisan direction is always destructive and poisonous to democracy. SCOTUS has the opportunity to bolster constitutional governance for generations, long past Trump's moment in time. With strong support of presidential immunity, let's hope they do it. And on does ignoring an enemy invasion equal aid and comfort? Relentlessness of the Biden cabal's insistence on open borders is raising questions. Why are so many military-aged Chinese men without spouses or children crossing the border? Is there a connection between the invasion at the border and CCP payoffs to the Biden family? Is China, under the CCP, an enemy of the United States, of course? Treason is the only crime specified in the U.S. Constitution, specifically defined to include giving aid and comfort to an enemy. Sam Faddis has pointed out no evidence the Biden cabal is even trying to find out why military-aged Chinese men are coming into the U.S. by the thousands. The American people are right to ask why. And on climate emergency coming your way, buzz at the White House increasing around possible declaration of climate emergency provides foundation for sweeping grab of dictatorial emergency powers, controls over fuel usage, food consumption, travel, even the conduct of the 2024 election. America has a rabid leftist cabal running the federal government. For an American government whose constitutional purpose is to protect Americans' God-given freedoms, to even entertain such a bogus, unfounded, and preposterous declaration ought to wake up any remaining asleep Americans. The left is engaged in an all-out war on America as founded. The stakes of the 2024 election could not be higher. Get engaged on the side of saving America. And that, my very fine friends, is America Can We Talk for today. I'm Debbie Georgiadis. Our show is America Can We Talk. The website is americacanwetalk.org. Please check it out and check out my campaign website, debbiegforrnc.com. I do this show, America Can We Talk, to speak truth about America because America matters. And I will talk to you next time.
Can We Talk? Truth about America. Can you-